Well, thanks very much, and thanks for moving a little forward. It's nice to be able to see some of the audience in this big room. It's very nice for us to be here at a session sponsored by the EPI section, because the mission of our program is to get across the word that law, although itself is not a science, it can be studied scientifically, and that in fact law is an important factor in many epidemiological stories. Maybe not always the main factor, but rarely an absent factor, and that we can study law and legal practices as rigorously and as comprehensively as we study other social institutions and other kinds of social practices that influence health. And in a time when we're looking ever harder at the structural drivers of health outcomes and health disparities nationally and internationally, the ability to study law more effectively, I think, is going to become ever more effective in epidemiological work. This presentation, which will tell you a little bit about our broader work as a National Program Office of the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, will then shift to the focus that I think is most immediately interesting in our work for epidemiology, and that's creating better legal data. We've confronted that after just a few minutes in operation, the realization that the way lawyers generally collect legal information and the way they record it and analyze it, which is essentially from text to text to more text, is not all that useful for quantitative research, and that we have to increase the willingness of lawyers to create, the willingness of researchers to create, and the ability of or willingness and awareness of researchers to use quantitative legal data sets in which law has been converted into numbers. But first you have to hear the commercial, because I think it's very important for us to sell the broader health community on the studyability of law and the value of studying law. I learned this very early in my career. I started working on HIV right at the beginning of HIV. And from the start as a lawyer, I was seeing the fact that, for example, the whole policy on HIV testing, our whole practice on HIV testing, the way we rolled out HIV testing as a prevention measure, was heavily influenced by the belief that people would be deterred from being tested if the results were recorded and reported to health departments. That was an article of faith that drove HIV testing policy from the start of the epidemic. Wasn't studied, however, seriously or well for more than a dozen years after or certainly a decade after the test came online, and turned out not really to be true, despite its significant importance. Another area that I worked on was the role of police as drivers of HIV epidemics among injection drug users. Again, something which was apparent. We knew about police and drug users even before we had HIV, and then we had a lot of good studies that showed how risk behavior was influenced by policing practices. And yet that, too, did not become even an issue of study for a good 10 years into the epidemic. So there's a lot of good reasons to study law as it affects health. The RWJF was convinced enough of that to make us the first in its new set of programs focusing on public health law, giving us 5 years and $17 million to help build the field and make the case for laws that improve health. We have a lot of wonderful people, including, I want you to note, some very distinguished scientists in our program. We are a science program, not really a law program, although we hope that by bringing lawyers into the mix, we can bring a more sophisticated empirical approach to law into health sciences. We also have a great national advisory committee, which is well stocked with both distinguished researchers and distinguished practitioners. And that's also important because we're committed to the view that practice has to be informed by and integrated into law, or I'm sorry, research has to be informed by and integrated into practice for the research to find the right questions and get them to the right people. So now you can see where I'm heading. We define public health law research, and we have a whole article about this that lays out our view in the Milbank Quarterly that's available free online. PHLR is the scientific study of the relation of law and legal practices to population health. We have a kind of simple schematic that tries to capture the breadth of that. We're, broadly speaking, we're interested in studies that have law on the left side and a health outcome on the right side. And potentially, ideally, covering the various mediators that happen in between. We're also interested in studies on how law gets made, so we include that over in the corner there. We fund research. We are doing a lot of work right now to improve the quality and rigor of research by propagating and defining and disseminating good research practices and methods for public health law research, including the stuff we'll talk about today in creating legal data sets. Increasingly now, as we've been around for 2 years, we are starting to have results from our grantees, and so we do a lot of work to translate that that research into practice and to get research evidence into the policy debate. We have funded 3 rounds of annual calls for proposals, somewhere near $8 or $9 million so far, maybe, and we intend to continue doing that. So please, if you're interested in our program, go to our website and register, and you'll get all the information about when our calls for proposals come out. We also have a currently open rapid response call for proposals aimed at either creation of legal data sets, so the topic of today's presentation, or evaluation studies of new, essentially rapid, things that require rapid response, natural experiments emerging, new laws that can be studied quickly and effectively on an initial basis. And we reach out to people and get them to do this, and we also accept applications from the field, from researchers. I'll just give you an example of a couple of the studies that are just starting to give results, and actually you can hear more about this one here at APHA. We have a study that showed that Philadelphia's unique lead court, a court devoted just to cases involving dwellings where children are exposed to lead, has been extremely effective in speeding the time of abatement and producing positive changes in blood lead levels of the children involved. So that's something that only Philadelphia does, but lots of cities need. So it's really an ideal one for us. It involves a court, a legal intervention, actually making a difference in health practice and health outcomes. On the more high theory side, we funded a study from Boston University School of Law, a bunch of those Bostonians, people from Harvard and Amherst and so on, all looking at a really creative study that demonstrated, that supported the hypothesis, essentially, that the patent laws that we have today are encouraging companies that make antibiotics to sell them, market them towards the end of the patent life in a way that rapidly promotes antibiotic resistance. So a great example of what we call incidental public health law, a law that actually has bad effects apart from those that it's supposed to have. Another study we've done in the practice side is an early study of how legal frameworks have supported health department accreditation, which was done in the years leading up to the formal launch of health department accreditation, and has been very useful to policymakers and health departments in trying to figure out how their legal frameworks can influence their ability to choose accreditation or not in that process. I think I've already talked about this. We really want to encourage a strong research practice link and also interdisciplinarity across the sciences of public health and law. One of the things we're doing now that you can see in our booth, which I will advertise in a minute, is trying to identify who belongs in this research community. You know, our view is we will adopt you if you will adopt a legal variable. The idea is not that we're going to have a group of people who identify themselves as primarily interested in the effects of law and legal practices on health. That's a small market. It's an important market. But what really has to happen for, I think, better research and the building of this field is that pretty much everybody who's doing social and behavioral analysis in health has to be able to know when legal variables should be included and be willing to include them. And so, in fact, we have in this beta version of our community, which is created by a fuzzy logic system using a commercially available platform that we're adapting, we have 5,000 people and over 50,000 articles that are identified as falling within PHLR. So people who may not even know that they're doing PHLR are, in fact, including legal variables and part of our group. The total number of articles in the database, the total number of all those 5,000 people's articles, however, is something like 250,000. So you can see that a lot of people who may be doing one out of 10 articles in studies is PHLR, but still doing something very important and really advancing this new field. We have an annual meeting, and this year it's open for the first time. It's in lovely New Orleans, and it's extremely low cost, and you can find out about it at our booth and on our website. We do a few things such as defining research agendas and looking at important areas in which law is apparently having an effect or something's going on that law is intervening with and trying to figure out what we know about whether that intervention makes sense or not. And we publish those, and those are available on our website. We've also are just launching what we call our Critical Opportunities Initiative, which is meant not primarily as a research exercise, but as an attempt to figure out where is it important in public health to use law, and how would we know that? What are the criteria we use to decide where we as a community should be putting our legal advocacy efforts? You know, right now we're kind of siloed, and we have people who think about where cigarette law should go and people who think about where HIV law should go, but we don't really sort of put that all together and think about what are the winnable battles, the most important things for our public health as a whole. So we'll be continuing with that initiative and looking forward to people's contributions to that as time goes by. We have a website full of methods guides, methods podcasts, sort of small bites or big bites, whatever you'd like to do in terms of finding out how you can integrate law into your research, available on our website. In fact, there'll be a whole book that I'm editing with Alex Wagner now about devoted to research methods in public health law, and we'll be actually having a session on that on Wednesday, where we look at some of the mechanisms of law, or what we call mechanisms of legal effect, trying to take that black box of law between the law and the outcome and have better research on the ways that law influences behavior. Today we'll be devoted to stuff coming out of this work, our first methods paper about how you measure law for evaluation research. We also have an effort to capture what works, so we've taken now 45 interventions from the Cochrane, Campbell, and Community Guide annals and summarized them for the public and policymakers. We're working also with the Network for Public Health Law, another sister program at RWJF, to get all this into practice, and you can learn more about all of that in our booth, number 2060. I'll be there tomorrow from 4 to 5, and it's fully staffed at all times. We have a movie with popcorn and your opportunity to see if you are, in fact, in the PHLR community. So thank you very, very much, and now I'll turn you over to the serious science part of the day.
Thank you.